From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The Graham-Cassidy healthcare bill is picking up steam. Just a week ago, who would have thought? The bill would repeal Obamacare and turn total control of healthcare dollars to the states. But as always, the devil's in the details, and there are plenty of them out there. What about Medicaid? What about pre-existing conditions? Who wins? Who loses? We're taking it all on board this hour on Point, the GOP's Hail Mary political football, and what it means for you. You can join us on air or online. Is a repeal of Obamacare what you want to see? Is this the way to do it? Are you worried about losing your coverage? Join us at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Joining me from Washington this hour is Noam Levy, national healthcare correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Noam, welcome back to On Point. Always great to have you.
Good to be with you.
So just when you thought repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act was dead in the Senate, my goodness, broadly speaking, give us the headline here. How is Graham-Cassidy different from previous Republican repeal bills?
So it's actually quite substantially different, and it goes far beyond, actually, some of the things that the earlier repeal bills did. As you mentioned, it would allow states to have a lot more control over the health care dollars that the federal government provides to help insure low and moderate income Americans. So states would have broad latitude to redesign their health care safety nets. But the important thing, I think the important caveats here with that change are, one, there's going to be a lot less money flowing to the states and a lot less money to some states in particular, which we can go into later. Mm-hmm. The other is that this additional flexibility gives states the ability to roll back some of the insurance protections that were enacted in the Affordable Care Act, such as the ban on insurers charging sick people more for coverage. That's obviously a very big deal and could have potentially quite wide-ranging consequences, particularly for people with pre-existing medical conditions.
We're going to dive into all these details throughout the hour. Let me play here first Republican Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina, one of the bill's sponsors, at a press conference on Tuesday, saying that Americans have two choices when it comes to health care.
It's pretty well clear to me where the country's going under Obamacare and BernieCare. It's going into further bankruptcy. It's more decisions further away from where you live. And in 1996, we block-granted money for welfare reform, and it worked like a charm. We put governors in charge of the program. We held them accountable. So here's the choice for America: socialism or federalism when it comes to your health care.
So this bill, Noam Levy, is suddenly on the fast track. Tell us about the Senate's rules that are about to expire on September 30th and how that plays into all this.
So this is the Senate. So, of course, there's a lot of process, and the process is complicated, and the rules are even more complicated. But essentially what Senate Republicans have been trying to do all year is advance a bill to roll back the Affordable Care Act using something called budget reconciliation. What does that do? Well, that's a special rule in the Senate that allows bills that are using this tactic to clear the Senate with only a simple majority. Recall, under normal circumstances, for a bill to get through the Senate, if it's controversial at all, it's subject to filibuster. So that usually means that a 60-vote supermajority is necessary to advance a bill. This budget reconciliation process is governed by some rules that the Republicans Congress passed at the beginning of this year. And one of those rules says that this privilege that the Senate has to advance this bill with a simple majority expires on September 30th. So the Senate has really only until the end of next week before they have to go back to using a more regular process to move health care legislation.
So the reconciliation rule expires September 30th, and so that's why this last-minute push.
That's right. And recall, Senate Republicans only have 52 votes in the Senate. So they can lose at most two Republican votes. The vice president would break the tie. So if they lose three, all Democrats are going to vote against this repeal package. Then it would presumably be dead.
All right. So let's dive into the details. What is in this proposal? What is in Graham-Cassidy? Start us off with the repeal of the individual and the employer mandates.
So this has been a common feature of almost all Republican repeal proposals for understandable reasons. The mandates are have been the least popular part of the Affordable Care Act since it was enacted. So those would go out. They would actually be retroactively eliminated, first and foremost.
And then Medicaid, which is a huge piece of this, covers 70 million people in this country. How does that change under this bill?
So remember, the Affordable Care Act essentially had two vehicles for expanding health insurance coverage to Americans. One was providing states with extra money for Medicaid, the 50-year-old government safety net program that states have historically run. States had the option to take this money and expand eligibility for this program to working-age adults. And working-age adults were a population that was, if they were poor, were not traditionally eligible for coverage in government safety net programs in most places. The other mechanism that the Affordable Care Act used to expand coverage was to create insurance marketplaces where people could buy regulated health insurance plans that had to abide by a lot of rules, like they couldn't turn away sick people, they had to offer a basic set of benefits. And the Affordable Care Act provided subsidies to help people who made a little bit more money than the poverty level, up to about middle class income, four times the federal poverty level. This group of moderate income Americans, to help them buy commercial health insurance plans on their own. What Graham Cassidy would do is take the money that the federal government is currently providing both to states through Medicaid for the expansion and for subsidies for people who are buying these health plans on these marketplaces, put it into a big pot, ship that pot to each state under a very complicated formula, and tell states, you take this money, you decide how you want to cover people in your state. You want to cover everybody through Medicaid, you want to cover everybody on commercial health plans, you want to take this money and stabilize health insurers. States have the discretion to do that. So this has been a principle that Republicans have argued for many decades. That is to say, give states greater authority to regulate their health insurance markets and decide how their health care safety nets look.
Right. And Senator Graham and Senator Cassidy say that this plan restores fairness, essentially, to a system that currently more than a third of the money spent on affordable care goes to just a handful of states, right?
Well, they do say that. That's misleading at best. So recall that the Affordable Care Act provided states with the option to take this federal money to expand their health care safety nets. 31 states have done that so far. A number of large states, mainly in the South, mainly deeply red states, decided that they didn't want the federal money. So Texas, Florida, Alabama, Mississippi, states that historically have had very high levels of both poverty and uninsurance, the governors and legislatures in those states decided that nevertheless they didn't want the federal assistance to insure those people. So it is true that there is more money flowing to healthcare safety nets in places like California and New York that have expanded coverage under the Affordable Care Act because state leaders in those states decided it was important for the states to provide health insurance. Mm. It should be noted as well that obviously New York and California are large, but these are not just the bluest of blue states. There are a number of states like Arkansas, Louisiana, Ohio, Kentucky that also have elected to expand health insurance coverage under the Affordable Care Act. So they are getting more money as well. So if there is inequity in that system, it is not because of the Affordable Care Act. It is because the governors and legislatures of Texas and Tennessee and Florida and Mississippi decided they didn't want to take federal money before to expand health insurance coverage.
What about people with pre-existing conditions? How would they fare under Graham Cassidy?
So we talked a little bit about the basic rules of the road that the Affordable Care Act set. There are a few of these that are important, and I think it's important to understand the details here. So number one, of course, is the guaranteed coverage. If you're sick and you go and try and buy a health insurance plan, a health insurer cannot turn you away. That's a huge change from what the world looked like before the Affordable Care Act, when sick people were essentially shut out of these markets. Number two, health insurers were prohibited from charging people who had pre-existing medical conditions, who had had cancer, who had had diabetes, even people who had things like acne, from paying more for their health insurance coverage. There were also limits placed on how much more people who were older could be charged compared to people who were younger. There were prohibitions on health plans putting annual and lifetime caps on how much medical care they would pay, also a common feature of health insurance before the Affordable Care Act. And importantly, health plans had to offer a basic set of benefits. So all health plans had to cover hospitalization. They had to cover prescription drugs. They had to cover mental health services and substance abuse services. That's a big deal, obviously, in the context of the current opioid epidemic. And they had to cover things like maternity care. Again, many health plans didn't used to cover this comprehensive set of benefits. Republicans have complained that many of these rules have increased the cost of health insurance, and there's some truth to that. And so what Republicans have argued in their repeal proposals is that states ought to have the flexibility to eliminate or scale back some of these protections, which independent analyses have showed would make health insurance potentially more affordable if you're not sick. But if you are sick and you live in a state that has decided that they will once again allow Blue Cross Blue Shield of X to charge two or three times as much to you because when you were a teenager, you were diagnosed with early onset diabetes, you're going to be paying more. And analyses of previous Republican health care proposals to roll back the Affordable Care Act by the Congressional Budget Office and others of this kind of proposal have categorically concluded that that would lead to higher costs for sick people and probably less insurance coverage.
Got to go to break here, Noam Levy. Quickly, the Congressional Budget Office has not analyzed this plan. Are they in the process? Where does that stand?
They are in the process of doing it, but we will not have, at this point, it doesn't look like we'll have a full analysis of this bill before the Senate wants to vote on it next week.
Support for this podcast and the following message comes from ZipRecruiter, who understands when you run a business, you've got important decisions to make every day, like hiring. ZipRecruiter makes finding quality candidates simple. With one click at ZipRecruiter.com/OP, you can post your job to 100 leading job sites across the web and manage your candidates all in one place with ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use dashboard. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by businesses of all sizes to hire. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/OP.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're speaking this hour about Graham Cassidy. It's on the fast track, what it means for health care in this country if it passes. We'd love to have you join the conversation. Do you need to see a CBO score before a vote on this? What do you make of the pushback from some Republican governors on this, from the same GOP senators who killed it the first time? Here yesterday at a New York event speaking is former President Barack Obama at an event sponsored by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. He called out the GOP for its efforts to dismantle the Affordable Care Act.
When I see people trying to undo that hard-won progress for the 50th or 60th time with bills that would raise costs or reduce coverage or roll back protections for older Americans or people with pre-existing conditions, the cancer survivor, the expecting mom, or the child with autism or asthma, for whom coverage once again would be almost unattainable, it is aggravating.
On Tuesday night, ABC late night host Jimmy Kimmel tore into the Graham Cassidy bill. Here he is saying Louisiana Senator, Republican Senator Bill Cassidy, obviously one of the bill's sponsors, lied when he appeared on the show and claimed to want coverage for all, including kids like Jimmy Kimmel's who have a pre-existing condition.
This guy, Bill Cassidy, just lied right to my face. Do you believe that every American, regardless of income, should be able to get regular checkups, maternity care, et cetera, all of those things that people who have health care get and need?
Yep.
So yep is Washington for nope, I guess.
The next day on MSNBC, Republican Senator Bill Cassidy had his response saying that this bill will protect people with pre-existing conditions so that it does stand up to the quote-unquote Jimmy Kimmel test.
There'll be more people covered under the Graham Cassidy Heller Johnson Amendment than are under status quo,
and we protect those with pre-existing conditions. There'll be billions of dollars for coverage for working families in states like Maine, Virginia, Missouri, Florida, and elsewhere, states that have been bypassed by Obamacare, but under Graham, Cassidy, Heller, Johnson, those folks will have insurance. And there's protection for those with pre-existing conditions.
With me this hour, Noam Levy, national healthcare correspondent for the Los Angeles Times. Let me bring in now from Kansas City, Kansas, Republican Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier. He is a medical doctor, a plastic surgeon, and he supports Graham Cassidy. Nice to have you, Doctor. Lieutenant Governor, nice to have you with us.
It's a great day today in Kansas. Absolutely beautiful.
So tell me why you support this bill.
You know, Obamacare has been failing us in Kansas. And it is what it has done is it has driven up insurance costs in the state of Kansas double digits for years and years. And what's happened is it's pushed a lot of people out of the regular commercial insurance market altogether because of the cost of that. And what it's done is it's made a program that doesn't fit Kansas. It fits other places. And for 100 years, we've been able to have our own insurance plans and let Kansans decide what is best for them. We think that Graham Cassidy is a good bill, but it has significant flaws, like every bill does. But Obamacare is failing us right now here in Kansas.
You say it's driven up costs. I'm looking here at an op-ed in the Kansas City Star today by former Kansas Insurance Commissioner Sandy Prager, saying that if Cassidy Graham passes, insurance rates in your state would resemble those that were in place before the Affordable Care Act, when they say, quote, tens of thousands of people with pre-existing conditions could not afford coverage and women could not purchase a standard policy that includes maternity care, among other things. When you hear that sort of argument, Jeff Collier, is that concerning to you as a physician, as a lawmaker?
You know, I care about people. I go into the hospital. I see people every day. And I talk to Kansans every day. I'm also a small businessman. And you know what happened to our practice? What we saw is for my employees, our insurance rates were up double digits, 20, 30% almost every year. It's more than doubled for my employees. And there wasn't anybody particularly sick or spending days in the hospital. So we lost, you know, it was an incredible expense that was put on, and it makes it hard to cover people in the private world. Now, here's the other thing, though, is Obamacare is failing in Kansas. Blue Cross Blue Shield, which is the dominant insurer in the state of Kansas, is pulling out of the exchanges because they have been losing tens of millions of dollars. What we would like to do is Kansans, I think they're closer. Kansans can make their own decisions. It doesn't have to be made by a faceless bureaucrat. And we're very happy to take that accountability and work on these things. Graham Cassidy isn't perfect, but it is a good step ahead for us on how we start to return control to the people.
Lieutenant Governor Collier, with 31% of the population of Kansas being low income, how would the changes presented in Graham Cassidy affect people in Kansas who are poor?
You know, so one of the things that's happening in Kansas is we want more control to design a program that is for Kansans. And we've started to do that. We started a program called CanCare, which starts to pay for outcomes for people, for low-income people, for people with disabilities. We'd like to have more flexibility to control that so that we can design a program that makes sense for Kansans and not to have to wait for years on the federal government to make those decisions. Let's let the state legislature work with us. Let's let the insurance commissioner, the governor. We want to work together here in the state for, you know, a resolution that makes sense for Kansas, not necessarily another state.
What about essential health benefits that require insurance plans to cover the basics, like maternity care, like lab tests, like hospitalizations? Couldn't states under Graham Cassidy waive those benefits? And as a physician, does that concern you?
You know, in Kansas and in most states, I can't speak for every state, but we had our own essential health benefits design, and that was done by the state legislature, by the elected representatives of the state of Kansas, in making plans that make sense for the state. I don't, you know, I believe that we should have the ability to cover, you know, people with pre-existing conditions. What this would allow us to do is take the money that is in Obamacare, use it for things like a high-risk pool so that we can lower rates for people, particularly those with disabilities, but so that we could have solutions that make sense for our state and are puts us on a level playing field. You know, one of the things that happens is Kansas, for example, we used to be about a 60-40 split on Medicaid, and that has moved against us about 5 or 6 points over the last few years. So that's hundreds of millions of dollars more a year that's costing the state of Kansas. And so what we want to do is we just want to be able to be on a level playing field. We'd like to be, you know, on the same level playing field as other states on what the state share is, but to allow us to design our own programs. Mm.
Critics say that instead of creating a single Obamacare replacement, that Graham-Cassidy would lead to a patchwork of 50 wildly different health care systems. You say that you want to tailor health care to your people, and I think most governors do. Is there a downside to that?
You know, there is a downside in one sense, in that, you know, we need to be able to sell insurance across state lines and do other. What we need to do is, this is one step. I don't think that we should look at this as, okay, this is it, and that's all there is. You got to let the states play out. You got to let the laboratories of democracy do their jobs. And we can. And here's the thing is, we did. You know, before Obamacare, our commercial insurance market was a much healthier insurance market. It had lower costs. We had more people covered under private insurance in Kansas for years when we were doing it ourselves. And I can't speak for California or New York or Missouri, but for Kansas, we'd like to be able to control our own destinies.
Lieutenant Governor Jeff Collier of Kansas, doctor, lieutenant governor, actually about to be governor in waiting in Kansas as Governor Brownback awaits Senate confirmation to become the next ambassador at large for international religious freedom. So thank you, soon to be governor, and Dr. Collier, we appreciate your time.
Great. Thank you so much.
Let me go to Washington now. Judy Solomon is with me, Vice President for Healthcare Policy at the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, a progressive D.C.-based think tank. She specializes in Medicaid and health reform implementation. She is against the bill. Judy, welcome to On Point.
Thanks for having me.
So what'd you hear in the comments of the lieutenant governor? A doctor, he supports this legislation. What's your reply?
Well, one thing that was interesting is what he really focused on was the individual insurance market and concerns about increased premiums and so on, whereas what Graham-Cassidy does is take much more than that and uproot really huge numbers of people from the Medicaid program by radically changing the entire program, the financing, and also really forcing states that have expanded and covered over 11 million people over the last 3 years to really face a disastrous situation because they would no longer be able to do that. So I think what he said to me really speaks to what was going on in the Senate with Senators Murray and Alexander trying to come up with a bipartisan solution to stabilize the individual insurance market. The other thing that's interesting is while he was speaking, I looked at the most recent census data, and the reality is that even in Kansas, which hasn't expanded Medicaid, from 2013 to now, there's been almost a 4 percentage point drop in the number of uninsured. So to me, that suggests that people have been taking advantage of the coverage under the Affordable Care Act in the marketplaces with subsidies.
Supporters of Graham-Cassidy also argue that the block grants that states would receive will return autonomy and flexibility to states. You heard Dr. Collier speak of that a little bit. How do you see it?
Well, it's really hard to see that happen when you're making a huge cut from the outset and then redistributing the money from states that have done a really good job. That claim on the four states getting 37% of the money, I mean, it's true, but they're also covering 32% of the people, and they're all states, California, New York, Massachusetts, and Maryland, that have higher health care costs.
Judy Solomon, Republicans say that Obamacare is not viable anymore. The exchanges are disappearing. The system is not financially viable. Is this a step in one direction, in the right direction, in some aspects to fix that?
No, not at all. Because what this would do, and I, you know, heard you quote the op-ed this morning from former insurance commissioner of Kansas. This is a step in the absolute wrong direction. People with pre-existing conditions, maybe they would continue to be able to buy coverage, but it would not be affordable to them because states could charge them more. States wouldn't necessarily have to cover the treatment they need for their conditions because they could waive those essential health benefits. Maternity benefits wouldn't have to be covered. And the real reality is this cuts the funding available to states. Now, in the short term, some states like Kansas would do better because of the redistribution from states that have expanded Medicaid to states that haven't. But the funding ends after 2026. So all states would see a cut when funding that has been used to cover people through Medicaid expansion and in the marketplace would be gone. Along with, and this has not been spoken about a lot, this bill, like every other repeal and replace bill, affects the entire Medicaid program, the program that had nothing to do with health reform. It's been there for 50 years. By changing its financing, capping funding, and causing huge cuts to states that grow over time. And that's the program that covers people with disabilities, seniors, and kids. And states would have to cope with that at the same time they are losing funding that had been going for the Medicaid expansion and the marketplaces.
Judy Solomon, Vice President for Health Policy at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Great to have your voice in this conversation, Judy. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Noam Levy, jump back in here. Two very different perspectives there. What did you hear in those two interviews?
Well, I thought you heard the Lieutenant Governor articulate the argument that Governor Cassidy, that Senator Cassidy and Graham have made about state flexibility. Unfortunately, as Judy Solomon indicated, it's belied by what the reality of what the legislation would do, and that's not just my opinion, that is the independent conclusion of pretty much anybody who's not a Republican senator or politician who's come to about this bill. If you look at what independent analyses from the Congressional Budget Office, from group healthcare consultants like Avalere Health, Manat Health, and importantly, I think, from every major healthcare group, every major patient advocate, the American Cancer Society, the American Medical Association, the American Academy of Pediatrics, the American College of Family, the College of Physicians, the March of Dimes, the AARP, the Consumers Union. There is not a single patient advocate, there's not a single leading hospital or medical group in this country who believes what the Lieutenant Governor was saying about this bill.
I got to get a listener in here. We've had a lot of conversation. Let me get Nate from Milwaukee, Wisconsin in here. Hi, Nate. I'm short on time, but I want to get you in here before the break. Hello.
Hi, Jane. I was going to mention two things,
okay.
One on pre-existing conditions, the other on states. I have a family with pre-existing conditions, one of which went through the insurance company that had been paid walking away from her while she was in a hospital bed. The other is I come from a state that has been so gerrymandered that our legislature does not represent us, and the idea of making this closer to the people by giving it to the state puts me off because our state has been a laboratory in trying to undermine democracy and is currently fighting in the Supreme Court against having basically anything but rigged elections for itself.
Nate, thank you. There's so much to get to here. Mike, Amy, Curtis, stick with me. We'll get to you after the break. We're discussing rapidly advancing health care bill out of the Republican Senate this hour. After this break, we'll look at the politics on both sides of the aisle on this issue. Graham Cassidy, making its mark. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We'll be right back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're discussing the political stakes of Graham Cassidy this hour, the GOP's latest attempt to repeal Obamacare. Those were protesters outside the Capitol shouting against the Republican health care proposal this week. Here's Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York slamming GOP lawmakers yesterday over the Graham Cassidy bill.
The latest version of Trump Care may live under a new name, Graham Cassidy, but no matter how many ways they try to dress it up, they try to hide it, it's even more dangerous and more reckless than the previous bill that was defeated. Simply put, Trump Care is a sham.
Here is Republican Senator Lindsey Graham in a press conference this week of South Carolina saying that Republicans are trying to get this bill through Congress.
Senator McConnell is doing everything he can. Paul Ryan told me to my face, if you pass it, we pass it.
Listeners, what do you think? Can the Republicans pull this off? Can the Democrats stop it? With me this hour, Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times. I've got to get on a few calls here. Let's go to Mike in Albany, New York. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hey, Jane.
Hi.
Hey, Noam. Thanks for having me on. New York is going to be targeted politically, and with the budget under Graham Cassidy, we're going to lose $33 billion. And it's not just the money, it's the policy attack as well. When you block grant Medicaid, you eliminate the legal entitlement to care so that states can ration care. They can impose time deadlines where they cut people off. They can say, we're only going to cover 30 grandmas in nursing homes this month. Your grandma's the 31st. You have to come and get her. And for disabilities, for serious conditions like HIV/AIDS, Medicaid is the backstop. People with AIDS literally are alive today because as new drugs came out, the federal government paid for half. States don't have to do that under a block grant. And I'm concerned about not just illness, not just death, not just suffering, but, you know, widespread catastrophe all over the country from the loss of basic health care for people in need.
Mike, thank you. It's a good point. I'm glad you called. Eugene from St. Petersburg, Florida. You're on the air. Welcome to you.
Hi. Yes, I just wanted to say that I'm only for Kimball because I would not vote for Graham because I've had 11 heart attacks and I'm diabetic. And if it wasn't for Obamacare, I'd already be dead because of the cost of the medications to stay alive and everything.
Eugene, thanks for the call. I'm glad to get your voice there. Let me bring in now Sungmin Kim, congressional reporter for Politico. Welcome back to On Point. Sungmin, nice to have you.
Thanks for having me.
So walk us through the political stakes here. This GOP healthcare Hail Mary, what's at stake for the Republicans here?
I mean, the state political stakes are pretty high here because it's been a difficult decision for a lot of these Republican senators, and you saw the pressure that they're feeling from their home states, especially if they represent, you know, swing states or states with governors who are pressuring Congress not to repeal Obamacare. But you have to think of the pressures coming from the conservative end of things, too. I mean, the Republican Party has run their campaigns and pledged for 7 years, essentially since Obamacare was signed into law in 2010, that they would, once they controlled all the levers of power in Washington, that they would repeal this law. Now they have the White House and full control of Congress, and they are, I mean, the pressure to deliver on those campaign promises is immense, and Senator Chuck Grassley of Iowa, a veteran senator who always tells us what he's thinking, made that point yesterday saying there might be many reasons not to vote for this bill, but the pressure of that campaign pledge is enormous. So that's really what has, that's one of the biggest factors that has really driven Republicans to this point. Obviously, the September 30th deadline helps to add on the pressure as well.
All eyes are on the possible GOP holdouts here. Republican Senator Susan Collins of Maine, and especially Lisa Murkowski of Alaska, they opposed earlier repeal bills because they said it did too much damage to Medicaid. John McCain voted no because lawmakers didn't go through the normal hearings process. Does this bill fix any of those problems that they were initially concerned about?
There are a lot, in many ways it doesn't. It still does cap Medicaid, so that should, and that should still be a problem for Senators Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins. And Senator Collins specifically has pointed that provision out, saying it is still a still a concern for her. She hasn't come out officially against the Graham-Cassidy legislation, but I think everyone watching this debate closely assumes she'll be that second Republican no behind Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, who says he's opposed to it because it's not conservative enough. It doesn't repeal Obamacare enough. So if you count those two senators aside, we are closely watching Senators McCain and Murkowski. Regarding Senator McCain and the process concerns, you've seen how Republicans have tried to deal with those process issues. For example, there are two hearings next week in the Senate on the Graham-Cassidy legislation. One of them is one of the committees of jurisdiction on health care policy, which is the powerful Senate Finance Committee. But it's, you know, it's just a hearing to hear about the merits of the bill. Is it going to go through a formal markup where committee members pore over every provision in the bill? Is it going to get a full CBO score? We already know the answer to that. The CBO, which the nonpartisan office that assesses the cost and the impact of the legislation, has already said they can get some sort of preliminary data, the cost impact of the Graham-Cassidy bill, before the September 30th deadline, but will not be able to get estimates on the coverage of, you know, how many people gain or lose coverage, or what the impact of on premiums of this bill. So would John McCain consider that a full regular order? That's still up in question right now. Remember, Senator Lindsey Graham, one of the namesakes of the bill, is John McCain's best friend
right.
in the Senate, which is a very fascinating dynamic. However, reporters who ran into John McCain yesterday on Capitol Hill and asked him about the latest developments with health care, he just kept saying over and over, I want regular order. I want the regular order. Order, which suggests to me that he's still not as satisfied how this bill is being pushed through, trying to be pushed through to the finish line.
You mentioned Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky. Here he is on Fox News saying he opposes the Graham-Cassidy bill because it is too similar to Obamacare.
The only thing this bill has that's an advantage over the insurance bailout bill is this one doesn't have the insurance bailouts, but it still continues the Obamacare taxes, continues the Obamacare spending, and really just redistributes it, takes it from Democrat states and gives it to Republican states. This does not fix the problem, and I cannot be in favor of a $1 trillion spending program.
There's Rand Paul, one of the most conservative members of the GOP. Noam Levy, jump back in here. How engaged is President Trump in this process?
Well, the Trump administration has gotten very engaged, particularly in the last week or so. Vice President Pence, who was up in New York where the president is attending the UN General Assembly, flew back on Tuesday to try to rally Republican senators. You know, President Trump was scathing in his criticism of congressional Republicans for their failure to advance a repeal bill earlier this year. Calling out Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell by name. And even yesterday when he was asked about – when the president was asked about this, he noted that he felt that Republicans had been embarrassed by their inability to do this. So to the point raised earlier about Republicans feeling this intense political pressure, in many ways it feels a little bit like that's driving this more than the detail of the policy. And in fact, there's been some reporting on the Hill, some excellent reporting by Vox and others – suggesting and Politico suggesting that many of these Republican senators have only a very basic understanding of what's in the legislation.
Let's get Curtis in here from Clinton Township, Michigan. Hi, Curtis. Glad you waited. Go ahead.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Hello, all. Really, I just wanted to comment on how we just keep dancing around the fact that the majority of the money spent on insurance really just goes to pay the salaries of these private insurance CEOs. I really like Bernie Sanders' plan. I mean, there's every other developed nation in the world has a health care plan administered by their government, and they seem to work pretty well for them. Why can't we do that here? Why is it? It's because all of these politicians are protecting their pals in the insurance industry.
Curtis, thank you. You know, there are some listeners on our website who absolutely agree with you. Here's one who says, can we just all agree that insurance companies are the problem here, that our healthcare system needs to be reformed, and that insurance companies are an impediment? Sungmin, how do you see this, and is there insurance reform in Graham-Cassidy?
I think there's, I mean, it does a lot of things, but I just, there are a lot of provisions on different corners of the healthcare system, but it's still, the caller's point about, you know, liking Senator Sanders' single payer system that was rolled out earlier this month. I think that, that element has been interesting because Republicans have pointed to that as a rallying point, saying, look, if we don't, you know, get behind the Graham-Cassidy legislation, the alternative is single payer. That's not true. I mean, the alternative is keeping the Affordable Care Act in the law, but it's in terms of the political dynamics, it's been interesting to see the element of Sanders' proposal, which has this growing following on the left, and seeing how that has impacted this current debate.
Let's get Aji in here from Columbia, South Carolina. Hi, Aji. Glad you waited. Hello.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I have one point to make.
Okay.
How about making every state, red, green, purple, whatever, to get the Medicaid expansion and work with it for 1 or 2 years? That way we will start in ground zero, equal footing, so Republicans and Democrats will have equal opportunity to do the comparison. And somebody can be a referee, okay, in 2018, this was the condition, 2020, this is the condition. It is okay to have ACA, mm-hmm, or it is not to have ACA. Mm.
Aji, thank you. That's definitely one idea. I appreciate your call. Let me get Michael in here from Columbia, Missouri. Hi, Michael. You're on.
Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Thank you.
You bet.
I want to make some points. First off, it seems to me that all that the Republicans have been trying to do is please their voters and push whatever they can through so they can say, well, okay, we did what we said, regardless of whether it benefits the people as a whole. And two, as far as that lieutenant governor, I wouldn't trust him. I mean, Kansas went bankrupt not too long ago. Two, if you turn it over to the states, they'll just be bought out. That's what happened before. Then you won't have any control. And three, you kept bringing up Missouri. Well, Missouri would have been doing fine under Obamacare, except our Republicans was not willing to take the Obama extra money to help offset it. And another thing is, what's another one?
Well, you're from Missouri, so you would know that bit about Missouri, Michael. I'm glad you called. Thank you. So, Sungman, jump back in here. How are Democrats strategizing? We heard Chuck Schumer there earlier. I mean, Senate Democrats rallied behind Bernie Sanders, just a few days ago, a single-payer plan. How are they thinking about this moving forward now?
So they're scrambling, much like us reporters who didn't expect to be dealing with Obamacare repeal again in at least this month. It kind of came up very quietly after the Senate and the Congress had cleared the decks of a lot of these must-pass bills, including hurricane aid and government spending bills. But now that we know that this is a very, very real possibility, Democrats have been working kind of on two fronts. So right now, since we expect a floor vote later this week, but nothing has been formally scheduled. Democrats right now are focused on building pressure from the outside, really urging constituents to call in to the Republican senators, particularly the ones who are undecided, much like their strategy during earlier this summer, to really put that home state pressure on the GOP senators. If and when the floor debate happens, Democrats have pledged to do, basically any and every tactic to try to kill this bill. I talked with Senate Minority Whip Dick Durbin of Illinois earlier this week, yesterday, and he said that, under these procedures that the Senate is doing to try to pass this bill, Democrats are obviously limited on options. The Republicans pass this with a simple majority rather than 60 votes. But there are things they can do. One thing that Senate Democrats are talking about is throwing basically every amendment possible at this bill to try to drag out the process. The fun thing about this Senate debate is it'll go through what's called a voterama, which is exactly what it sounds. You vote until you are blue in the face. You throw every amendment possible. possible as long as it is relevant on this bill. And that could be one way that Senate Democrats, I mean, depending on when the Voterama starts, could drag it beyond this deadline. There are risks to that. You know, the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell could try to make that get ruled as dilatory tactics, which hasn't happened before. But strategically, there are things that they Democrats can do such as that. But right now, they are really focused on building that outside pressure.
Noam Levy, Republicans were one vote shy last time around. Might this actually come to a vote in the coming days? What do you see?
Oh, I think it would be foolish to pretend that we know the answer to that question. The same votes that were in focus over the summer, McCain, Murkowski, Collins, Rand Paul, a few others from states that would be particularly hard hit by this proposal, I think are clearly the lawmakers to watch. But this has been an incredibly unpredictable process and one that I suspect will take more twists and turns this week as it gets closer to the vote.
And Sung Min, what would another failed attempt on repealing and replacing Obamacare mean for the GOP in our last 20 seconds here?
I mean, it would be a really major political failure once again, and that's why it's unclear whether Majority Leader Mitch McConnell will actually put this to a vote. You need 50. Would he put a bill up there just to let it fail to show the base that they tried? We don't quite yet know.
Well, we will keep watching. To be continued, as they say, a really informative hour. Lots of information. We appreciate your expertise. Noam Levy, national healthcare reporter for the Los Angeles Times. Always great to have you, Noam. Thanks.
Thank you.
Sung Min Kim, congressional reporter for Politico. Thanks for giving us the political side of this, Sung Min. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Continue the conversation. Listeners, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.